I'm now joined with Councillor Donal Cooney, Green Party, to discuss plans to consider year-round water tests to protect sea swimmers, also about the new All-Ireland Pollinator Plan to encourage biodiversity, and about the newly strengthened Climate Action Bill approved by Cabinet. Good morning, Donna. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Johnny. Lovely to speak to you again.
First of all, Donna, water quality monitoring is only undertaken during bathing season and not for the remaining 8 months of the year. However, protection for all year-round swimmers for sewage-borne bacteria is now being considered by the National Bathing Water Expert Group. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, I wrote to the, well, I've been long time campaigning to extend the bathing season because I'm an all year round swimmer myself. But this particular, since COVID restrictions, anybody can witness that it's become extremely popular in Dublin here all along the bay, so much so that we've had to put up signs to, a swim and go so that people, you know, could keep their physical distance, get into the water and let somebody else get in after them. But, you know, there's thousands of people, you know, out swimming every day or all year round. And a lot of people are not aware that outside the bathing season, that there is some testing, but it's very infrequent. And that those results are not then published. What happens within the bathing season is that the local authority would test the water. They would then notify the EPA, and the EPA then put it up on their website on a special dedicated page, which is beaches.ie, and you can check your particular bathing spot to see what the water quality is like, whether it's good, satisfactory, poor or excellent quality, and make your mind up yourself and whether it's safe to swim. Sometimes there's prohibitions put in because the health board might say, you know, that it's at a level where there's a public risk. But people don't know that outside the bathing season. And we don't need to change the law because the EU directive allows the state to decide what is the time of the bathing season. So we've decided to take a very restrictive one from June to mid-September because it's based on when you can reasonably expect large numbers of people to be swimming. So I think now that needs to be revised because as we can see now, we reasonably expect large numbers of people to be swimming all year round. So it could be extended to January to December. And that's what happens in other EU states. Now, in more northern countries, it has been more limited, but that is being revised, I think, even a whole EU-wide. Basically, I put in a submission, as others did, to the EU Commission, who are doing a review at the moment on this. I've also looked for some areas to be designated as bathing areas because people aren't aware that even though the water is tested on the North Wall and reported during the bathing system on the North Wall, where all the bathing shelters are on Bull Island and is traditionally the bathing area, that area is not actually designated as a bathing area. The beach is, where less people swim. You might get kite surfers are there, but it's quite a distance before you can get out to go for a swim. So most people swim on the steps and by the bathing shelters along the North Bull Wall. And that is not actually designated as a bathing season. And every year, myself and teams of sea swimmers put in an application and the local authority normally come back to and say that we don't want to recommend this as a bathing area because we're afraid it might not actually meet the criteria. Well, this is what people are using. If it doesn't meet the criteria, don't say we're not going to do that and we're going to push it under the carpet and pretend it's all okay and ignore the fact that people are actually using it. So Dara O'Brien, the Minister Dara O'Brien, I wrote to him as well and he came back with response that it was being reviewed and that he was putting it to the expert group to look at it.
The Minister also mentioned that fast result E. coli test kits for swimming and water sport groups to avoid the 18 to 36 hour wait for lab results could be an alternative. What's your view on that?
Yeah, well, it's what I requested from the Minister to consider this at the moment. And that is something that would have to be changed in terms of the EU regulations because they insist that it's done in a laboratory and a certain type of way is done. But I think now that we have new technology, this is particular water testing kit that I was referring to has been developed by the DCU Water Institute. And I was up with them there a couple of years ago to meet with them to discuss that and to look at it. And it shows in a very short amount of time, it's almost immediate, really. And it shows if there's a high level of enzymes in the water. And that's in indicative of the fact that there's E. coli contamination. So these kits have been tested. They've been tested out in Fingal and Dunleary, and they actually have ones at the moment. The hand testing kits are they haven't actually, don't have a large number of them because they're looking for funding. They're looking for investments so that they can actually develop a large number of these handheld kits. But they could put out, if they were given permission, they could put these kits out into the sea and they could be testing the water and at least do a pilot for a year. So I think we don't even need to wait for the EU on this, because it will give us results which we can use in terms of evaluating the safety of the water and the quality of the water.
Okay, so these kits, they would not only be faster but more financially viable in the long term. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, well, they allow us to know. Sometimes we have bathing restrictions put in place and it may not even be necessary because it takes up to, say, you know, 3 days before the results get reported back and the ban is lifted, where you could find that maybe the water quality is just not good for half a day or 1 day. It could be fine the following day, but you're waiting for the results to come back. So there's a lot of people that are maybe not being able to avail of an amenity, which they could do. And they're relatively cheap. I mean, like, especially if they're put into a larger production. And obviously, because it's DCU and a water institute, the money is coming back into our educational institutions. So it's, you know, so it's a win-win in terms of allowing them to, you know, to develop even more. And this could be something that could be obviously used worldwide, you know. So there's great potential.
Yes, and at the same time, you could have both situations working in conjunction with each other, like Irish Water doing tests at the same time, maybe not as frequent during the off-season.
Irish Water, yeah. Oddly enough, that's what's happened. There's so many different. Irish Water do not test the water. I've requested them to do this and to actually invest in these testing kits, and they say it's not. It's the local authority that tests the water. So Irish Water might have an overspill or might actually pollute the water due to whatever overcapacity or issues. They are then supposed to report that. The local authority are the ones that test the water, and then the local authority tell the EPA and then also the health board. So there's four different agencies, and then there's EU Commission who are actually taking actions and have reprimanded Ireland and Irish Water over our issues in relation to water quality. So you've got all these different bodies, and then you've got the minister who's in charge of this as well. So you've all these different bodies. It's quite solvable, you know what I mean? And I think, I actually think, you know, under this minister who lives in an area where there's a lot of sea swimmers and represents an area where obviously a lot of his constituents, I think where there's real hope that I think there is an interest in this by Dara O'Brien to do something, you know.
That sounds great. On a slightly different note, Donna, Green ministers are launching the new All-Ireland Pollinator Plan to encourage communities, families and businesses to do what they can to assist our pollinators. Tell us briefly more about it and the six objectives within the plan.
Yeah, well, there's six objectives in the plan. I mean, as we all know, Irish pollinators are in decline. And as I said, the problem is pretty serious. We've actually had some improvements with the last pollinator plan, and that's come to its 5-year fruition. And now we have the next pollinator plan from 2021. And the six objectives were making farmland pollinator friendly. And that's working with the farming communities to achieve awareness of pollinators and resources they need to survive on farmland. And pollinators are very important to farmers in terms of, you know, for so many reasons. A lot of the time it's just about education. Some of this knowledge is there with people over generations, and some of it's been lost. And, you know, they might think maybe that's a bit of a nuisance, that hedge or leaving those flowers or meadow uncut, but they don't actually realise that, you know, that the bees are very important, the pollinators are very important in terms of the whole cycle, and in terms of if they're using pesticides and things like that, and how they can actually damage our pollinators, whereas they're actually, by letting this thrive, it could be of benefit to them because the bees do a lot of their work for us, you know what I mean? Like, they've, you know, they're the ones that make sure that the fruit trees produce fruit, because they're going around from one flower to another and cross-pollinating and making sure that we end up with our fruit and our food, you know. So
take dandelions, for example, just an example. I mean, people have mixed views about them. Some people classify them as weeds and a nuisance, but they're not only beneficial for pollination, but also in many other areas, such as, you know, herbal remedies. They're even edible. What are your views on this?
Oh, Well, a dandelion, I did make some dandelion wine one time, turned out to be a little too potent, but dandelions, yeah, you can make, it's as everybody knows, it's quite good as a diuretic. It helps if you have any sort of water retention issues, but I wouldn't recommend people to be using herbal remedies without having a bit of knowledge, because you can't just take them, you know. I think you should go to a herbalist or find out, do a course on it, because you need to know the quantities, you need to know whether it's something that you should, you know. I wouldn't recommend people to go out, pick a load of dandelions and start making their own, you know, infusions or things like that without checking out a bit of knowledge beforehand. And it's you know, I think it's just a matter of objective. If you start seeing them as something that is really, really beneficial to nature, really, really beneficial to biodiversity, then, you know, you no longer see them. And they're bright yellow and colourful. They're a very, you know, good source of food for pollinators. But, you know, we have just learned to see them as being a nuisance. They're fun in terms of blowing the, you know, you can make your wishes. You know, I don't know if you ever remember loves me not.
Right.
You know, when you blow your you know, they go into seeds. So, like, no, I mean,
I used to do that with Ginny Joes.
Ginny Joes? What was Ginny Joe?
You know, the one that blows away very easily.
Oh,
the white one.
The white one.
Donna, tell us briefly about the importance of having a balance for bugs like wasps, flies, midgets and so on, even slugs and snails, because it all ties into this wild growing areas as well, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I mean, obviously, like everybody knows that the hedgehog is a gardener's friend. And if we don't leave sort of hedges and places that have wildlife corridors, we end up, you know, losing our hedgehogs. And they used to come into people's gardens and around. And that means that they eat a lot of the snails and the slugs. Also having areas for birds, you know, actually eat a lot of our pests and things like that, you know. So, you know, it's like, you end up with things that we see as being negative insects. And the reason that they end up thriving and the others is because they're predators who upset the balance of nature. And we need to put that balance back. And a lot of that is about sort of letting go of our idea that everything needs to be neat and tidy, and at least leaving an area of to go wild and in our garden, and knowing later in the year, you know. So, you know, so I mean, when you're sort of nagging yourself for nagging somebody else to go out and cut the grass, you should be saying, don't cut the grass, leave it another month, relax, take it easy, you know. Just listen to the birds and the bees and put your feet up for a while.
Okay, so the overall plan though is to involve local authorities in having a wild area in some of our parks.
Yeah, we need to restore nature and allow a little wildness. Sometimes it might be that they might even just leave certain circles of the grass to go longer. They might cut a path around it, you know, and do it in a way. And it's just getting the knowledge out to people as well. And people are becoming a lot more aware. I think people are becoming closer to nature as they have gone out. I suppose what's happened during COVID is that they have gone on long walks and they've had time to really look and reflect and take in nature and a big nature around them. So, you know, that's been a good thing. And I think this is going to be very successful. I mean, we've got so many different varieties of bees and bumblebees, and we've only got one honeybee, actually. We've one native honeybee that, you know, I think we're unusual in the sense that our honeybee is our native honeybee, and that hasn't, it's a pure, basically purebred a honeybee. And, you know, so, I mean, we have a lot to be grateful for and a lot to protect in Ireland. And it's, you know, it's just improving our knowledge at all levels and understanding. If people aren't aware, sometimes they think they're doing good by doing something, but you might actually be doing damage, you know. So it's just being aware of that, you know. So
yeah, some of our parks, there are designated areas. And I was surprised, actually, during a walk once, the amount of wild flowers of different colours all mixed in together. It was incredible. Like, you could make a bunch out of it and give it to somebody.
St. Anne's Park did really well. They did win an award. They run a the Green Parks Award with Antashka, which is very prestigious, last year, and they got a certificate as well for pollinators. They're hoping to do even better this year. So they have great plans, and I know that, I mean, we have our biodiversity officer, but I know all our staff. I don't know if you saw St. Anne's Park on Nationwide last week, and it was just beautiful to behold, and the pride that the park staff have and the knowledge they have about this. And in fact, all community groups, they've put a booklet together, which any community groups that are interested, that can be sent out to them, which explains all about pollinators and, you know, and wildflowers and planting. And they'll provide bulbs for people to plant, because bulbs are very good because they're a very early source of pollen. Daffodils, our common daffodil, I mean, people say daffodils are really, really good in terms of supply as well. So when you see all those daffodils out in Fairview Park, they're not only beautiful to look at, but they're also very good as early pollinators for our bees that have been in hibernation for the winter.
Okay, finally, Donna, a new strengthened climate action bill has recently been approved by Cabinet. Tell us how this bill will benefit Ireland in terms of reductions in emissions by the year 2030.
Well, it's really essential that we do this. And we had been laggards really in the world in relation to this. And now we're really one of the, well, actually, well, if you see what, I don't know if you see that what they're going to be bringing in the US, there's real hope now under the president that they're coming with a very strong high climate bill over, the climate action bill over there as well. So that's great hope. We need to reduce by at least 51% by 2030, and then we need to be going to neutral by 2050. This will be a huge change in people's lives, but it's not something for people to be afraid of, because I think it, with it brings a huge opportunity in terms of making sure that everybody has warm homes that are energy efficient. Not only energy efficient, we could actually be producing energy that we can sell back into the grid. We can have lower, obviously, one of the biggest costs that people have, bar putting a roof over their head, is their heating. So, I mean, we could actually be having very, very low cost heating with renewable energy. We have so much wind. You know, it's a resource that we're just not tapping into enough. But, you know, it's, and also a micro energy, people being able to set up micro energy. And then also, like, there's grants coming about for people to move to electric cars. But also in terms of making a lot of your journeys, if you can, by active transport. So there's a whole lot of things. And then agriculture. And with that, I think, is opportunity as well. We do import a lot of our foods at the moment, where we could actually producing a lot of that food at home in a much more sustainable way. You know, traditionally, where we had North County Dublin as being like the market area of Dublin, it's so close in terms of growing crops. But a lot of our crops that are growing are produced in order to feed cattle, where we could actually have directly growing foods, so for people. And, you know, and then a lot of, say, but planting in a way, planting trees, native trees, planting them as companions, planting them within fields and around fields and hedgerows, that help in terms of climate, because we have to think of climate mitigation as well, and we have to think of protecting biodiversity. But the trees act not only as carbon sinks, but they also act in terms of the effects of climate change, in terms of extreme weather events and heavy rains and flooding, because they soak up so much water of the water. So we need to take up a lot of more of our hard surfacing, so that we can have a lot more planting. We need to put, you know, what we're doing is creating a lot more safer routes to school for walking and cycling, safer routes around our communities. And there's new things coming on board in terms of cargo bikes that'll be coming in. There'll be grants to get cargo bikes. There's new hire system coming in for cargo bikes. You know, so there's a whole lot of different schemes that are coming in that people will be adapting. But I think in the end, we're actually going to have a better world because of it. Yeah. So it's not only for the future. It's not something to be afraid of. It's something, I think, that is actually going to be beneficial for all of the community.
Right. So we leave it there for today. Donna, thanks again for joining us. All the very best. Yeah. Do take care.
All right. Thank you, Johnny. Bye-bye. Yes.
Now, that was Councillor Donna Cooney, Green Party, talking about plans to consider year-round water tests to protect sea swimmers, also about the new All-Ireland Pollinator Plan, and about the new strengthened climate action bill recently approved by Cabinet.